Good morning. It's good to be back with you. I was sharing, I just got back from Montreal last night. I pulled into my home around midnight, so I'm a little groggy today, but in meetings in Montreal with the Canadian Council for Refugees, which MCRS is a member of, every September we get together to talk about the big issues and what are we going to do and how are we going to address those. And there are a lot of them right now. We are in interesting times, troubling times, but also times when it's in times like these we get to see God at work, right? We get to see what God can do, and sometimes we can forget what He can do, and or sometimes we get overwhelmed by what's going on in the world. And it's easy to get overwhelmed when you read the headlines and when you think about, you know, the United Nations just said 70 million people are on the move. And here in Canada, we can get this sense that all 70 million are going to show up here someday. Well, they're not. As it pertains to asylum seekers, of that 70 million, about 3 million are asylum seekers. And of those 3 million, oh, is that water mine? Oh, that's wonderful. Excuse me. Of that 3 million, about 55,000 make it to Canada. Now, let me put that into perspective, because one of the concerns, and you're going to hear this in the coming weeks, more than you have in the last year, about our borders not necessarily being as secure as maybe some people would like them to be. But let me put this into perspective of 55,000 people coming, half of them coming between border points, and I'm going to put this teaser out, come back for Christian education time, and I'll explain to you why they are coming in between border points, why that is so necessary right now. But last year, 22 million visitors came to Canada from other countries. 22 million visitors. We know more about those 55,000 people than we know about those 22 million visitors that go back and forth across our borders. We know their identities. We know where they came from. We know what they're all about. We know if they're a security risk or not. We know what if they have any criminality. We know them probably better than we even know some of our neighbors. We definitely know them better than the 22 million visitors that go back and forth every day. So 55,000 in that context actually really isn't that many. And they're coming with a need. And they're coming hungry, and they're coming scared, and they're coming hoping somebody will listen to their story. And some of them show up at MCRS. And the parable of the Good Samaritan is foundational to MCRS. We say that this is us. This is who we are. And it's like, well, what exactly does that mean? What does it mean to be the Good Samaritan? And, you know, at a very basic level, especially when we teach it to children, we would say, well, it's being kind and noticing needs and stepping out and doing something to meet those needs. I'm going to suggest to you, though, that that's not what Jesus was talking about. Because it starts off, if I can help you understand the context of this, Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. Luke, you know, when we look at Bible passages, we have to look at not just the passage itself, but how did the author place it in the rest of what he was trying to say? And a little earlier, before this section, he reminds his readers that Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. He is into the home stretch, if you will, his final days. And right before the Good Samaritan passage, we have this section where he has sent out people two by two into the places he is going to come to on his way to Jerusalem. And there's all kinds of places along the way that would bring compromise to Jesus and would certainly challenge the people who are listening to his teaching and listening to what he's advocating for. And they would say, but Jesus, them. And this is exactly what happens. He's reaching them. People that we wouldn't necessarily have anything to do with. That the people of the day wouldn't necessarily have anything to do with. And that is rooted in an understanding of Scripture. When the people came out of Egypt and were in the desert, and God said, here is how I want you to act as a community. He gave all these laws, and it's in a book that we tend not to spend a lot of time in, but we really should spend more time in, and that's Leviticus. Because, you know, especially those first 8 chapters, they're kind of hard to get through all those sacrifices and things like that, and very detailed. But there's these community codes of how to conduct yourself, how to be a community, and how to deal with the people who come from afar. Now remember how they were treated as the stranger in Egypt. They ended up in slavery, right? Ended up their sons being thrown into the river and their daughters being raised up to be slaves. And what boys were allowed to live were put into this hard, ruthless, manual labor. They were not treated well. And the land that they were going to go into actually treated their dogs better than they treated people. They discovered a number of years ago in an archaeological site in the area of Sidon, which is up in the northern tip of where Israel is today, a burial site with a number of dogs with amulets, and they were placed ever so carefully, and the tails, you know, it was like a masterpiece of burial of dogs. And not far away, they discovered another burial site in what would have been called the Red Light District. And adults know what that means. Where they found the remains of 100 infants just dumped. And they discovered that most of them were boys. Because boys aren't needed in the Red Light District. That was the land they were going into. And so God wanted to shape them to think differently, to think about what it meant, especially given their experiences, especially given what was in front of them, and how important it was going to be a community that did things God's way, that treated people with dignity and respect and their humanity as one being made in the image of God. And so as Jesus is going from Galilee and working his way down to Jerusalem, he's calling people back to that community code to say, this is how we do life. This is the good news that God had intended all along. And the disciples, you know, when they come back from going into these villages and, you know, at one point they say, hey, it's unbelievable, Jesus, what's happening here? And Jesus says, I saw Satan fall like lightning. In other words, the kingdom of darkness took a big hit as people were coming and responding to that good news. It's that context that this expert of the law stands up and says to Jesus, I need to test you. I actually don't like what I see going on here. So Jesus, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus, being the wise, knowledgeable Son of God, asks the lawyer, how do you interpret the law? And it's a valid question, because even today what are the big questions of law? Well, how do you interpret it? And you get this lawyer interpreting it this way and this lawyer interpreting it this way. And you know, at MCRS, we're dealing with an interpretation of the law right now that where the Law Society of Ontario would say what we are doing is illegal. Because we're actually explaining to people the documents that they need to complete so that they can complete them. That's called giving advice. Only lawyers are allowed to do that. That's their interpretation. There's another interpretation that, and you can't do that if you're being paid to do that. You can do that if you volunteer. So we could do our work if everybody volunteered. So do you hear it's about money, right? It's about money. Who's getting paid to do this? Oh, you have to be a lawyer to be paid to do this. Well, we're taking the position of, you know, if I go to Rogers and to do a, get a cell phone and I don't understand the contract, I'm going to ask the person behind the counter, could you please explain this contract to me? I don't understand this section. And that person will explain it to me, even though technically they are now giving advice to me that only a lawyer can give, right? So we're going forward, and we're just continuing our work until the Law Society comes along and says, don't do this anymore, and then we'll just say, yeah, no, we're going to just keep doing this, and you can take us to court if you want to, and they won't. Because they know that if all the NGOs like us got shut down, disaster would happen in Ontario. There's 22 organizations helping asylum seekers in Ontario. If we all stop doing what we're doing, there will be chaos in Ontario. So we press on, trusting that the Lord will uphold the correct interpretation. But here's this lawyer, and he wants to know, how do you inherit eternal life? That's not really his question, because he's looking at all these people who have been told they're going to have eternal life because they've responded to the good news, and he's going, they're not us. They're them. They're strangers. They don't, especially the Samaritans. Because remember, Jesus has actually just come through Samaria. And he had a little bit of opposition in Samaria. So this lawyer is thinking, see, they don't want anything to do with you, Jesus. So Jesus turns it around, says, how do you read it? And the lawyer says, he goes all the way back to laws in Leviticus and that were also repeated in Deuteronomy. And he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. So Leviticus 19 and Deuteronomy 6. And I used to be a family ministries pastor. We loved Deuteronomy 6. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all your strength. Love, you know, and so parents, you know, tie that around your foreheads, bind that on your wrists, go do it when you sit, when you rise, when you walk along the way, right? It's the all-comprehensive discipleship passage. And Jesus says, you've answered correctly. Do this and you will live. What's interesting is in verse 29, he says he wanted to justify himself. So something about this interaction was a problem for the lawyer. Because a lawyer wanting to justify himself says he's not happy with the interpretation here. It's put him in a difficult situation. It doesn't tell us exactly why he felt he needed to justify himself, but that he felt that he needed to. He was now, in Jesus' interaction, put in a position where he was in trouble with the very law that he was an expert in. And so he says, let me split hairs here and say, who's my neighbor? Because, you know, again, back in Leviticus, that was the command, love the neighbor as yourself. And then a little bit further, we talked about the foreigner coming into the midst and to be treating them as one of your own. And he's like, can we split that? Can we actually create that gap again and keep, you know, neighbor and foreigner separate in the interpretation of the law? because that's how he was doing life. You have to be one of us. And in reply, Jesus tells him this story that was read about a man going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. A nasty travel route, by the way. Not one you would normally travel alone. It was well known for being a place where you would be attacked and robbed and where your very life could be at risk. So this was not you know, kind of like the walk through the Huron Park nature area. This was a dangerous road, and a man is traveling alone on it, and he falls into the hands of robbers. They strip him, they beat him, and they leave him for dead. And then nothing else is ever said about these robbers. So there's no justice that happens here in terms of catching the bad guys. What we have are people that come along, and the first one, a priest who would know the law. To be a priest, you had to know the law, especially that community code. And that priest comes along, and it says he saw the man, and he passed by on the other side. Now, when we read that in English, we think, oh, he saw, and it's kind of like, oh, that's kind of interesting, and just keeps on going, right? That's not the original word here. The word that said he saw means he actually went up, beheld, took it in, took well note of this man's condition, and walked away. Maybe, it doesn't say why, but maybe because there was this ceremonial code that as a priest he couldn't get defiled. Can't get dirtied by this. Can't get my hands dirty because then I won't be able to do what I'm called to do. Right? So to a Levite, again, part of that larger worship class, the Levites helped the priest. The Levites were a set apart people whose inheritance God guaranteed. So they didn't get the land. When the land was divided up, they didn't get land, because God was going to be their inheritance. And all the tithes that the people gave and the first fruits offerings were to go to the care of the Levites and the widows and the orphans and the strangers. So the Levites are actually part of that group that is vulnerable. And the Levite, when he comes to the place and sees him, also passes by. And again, same word, takes a good look. This one who knew vulnerability, this one who knew that if the people didn't respond the way God had instructed them to, he was going to go without dinner, him and his family. But he also passes by. And then a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was. And when he saw him, when he took a good look, it says, he took pity on him. And again, that word, we think took pity, okay, you felt sorry for him and he responded. It's a much stronger word than that in the original language. It's the idea of being hit in the gut. It's the same word that when Jesus looked out over Jerusalem and wept, he took pity on the people that he saw. It comes from that word, it's the Greek word splenkna. It's like, really, here. It's like somebody hauled off and hit him in the stomach. I don't know if you've ever been hit in the stomach. I've been hit in the stomach. It knocks the wind out of you. It makes you double over. You can't help but respond. You're not thinking about anything else. That's what the Samaritan does. He can't help but respond. It knocks the wind out of him, what he sees. And he gets involved. And the Samaritan would have been the last person this lawyer was expecting to hear. In fact, he would have heard, you know, again, in the legal formulas, he was waiting to hear priest, Levite, Jew. Because that was the community structure. And so when Jesus says priest, Levite, Samaritan, he's got everybody's attention. This was the unexpected, completely in every way. This violated everything they understood about the structures of society and the other, that foreign other. Went to him, bandaged his wounds, pouring oil and wine. I want to just stop there just for a second, because right now we've been looking at this from the perspective of who's walking by. But now let's actually take it from the perspective of the one that's lying in the ditch. He's only half dead.
I just baptized the carpet.
I got another water here. Think of the man lying in the ditch, and somebody comes up, takes a look, and walks away. You're lying in the ditch, and a second person comes, takes a good look, and walks away. What are you feeling as that man, with no capacity to do anything for himself, shamed by having been stripped, not just looking at this man that's been beat up, he has been stripped of all human dignity and had people look on that and walk away. Imagine being that person. And then a third person comes up. Imagine where you might be thinking now. Three strikes, you're out. Right? Except this person reaches down and touches you and pours oil and wine on you. Those are elements of worship. You couldn't do worship without oil and wine. This was someone pouring the elements of worship on your body, taking you up, physically picking you up, right up, you know, even picking up a child. How close to their body do they have to get for you to be able to hang on to them and move them? This is full contact now. And being taken over and put onto his animal. And probably no doubt covered now. And then slowly walked into the closest village where there would be an inn. And taken into that inn, into a private room, cared for, attended to all night. Because it says in verse 35, the next day he took out 2 denarii. And gave them to the innkeeper. So he stays with them and attends to him through the night. And then gives instructions to the innkeeper, look after him. In other words, continue the work. Don't just leave him up there. I'm coming back. And when I come back, I'll cover your expenses. Look after him. On my behalf now. I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. Then Jesus says, which of the three do you think was a neighbor? There's a turn. The lawyer has said, who is my neighbor? And Jesus turns around and says, who became the neighbor? Who is the neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? It's a good question that we need to ask, because when we talk about who is our neighbor, we think the foreigner, we think, you know, the asylum seeker, we think the person down the road who needs us, and Jesus takes it and says, no, you've misunderstood the law. You have to go above the law. This is about you. Are you the neighbor? Will you be the one that will become the neighbor? put yourself in a vulnerable situation? Will you get your hands dirty? Will you take risks? Will you give up some of the goodness that you've experienced in order to meet the needs of somebody else? And the expert in the law realizes what Jesus has said to him. Some would say he can't even name this Samaritan. He's still struggling. I don't know. Might be reading into the text, but he says, in answer to who became the neighbor, the one who had mercy. And Jesus tells him to go and do likewise. Whether this lawyer did or not, we don't know. We know he had the opportunity, and we know from that point on, Jesus really starts to dig in to what it means to walk in a kingdom perspective. We have laws right now in our land that are changing. It feels like almost monthly, particularly as it relates to the asylum seeker. Just a little while ago, it was, you know, if a woman had made a refugee claim in the States, and her claim was based on merciless domestic abuse, that would have been adequate to get protection. But the United States said domestic abuse is no longer a valid claim for protection in the United States. And so it's still a valid claim in Canada, so people would then come to Canada, except that Canada passed a law in the budget, the federal budget, that said anyone who has already made a claim in the United States cannot make a claim in Canada now. So all the women, and there are many of them, who were making a claim on the basis of domestic violence that the state could not deal with, that the police might even have been involved with, could no longer get protection in the States, but now can no longer also get protection in Canada because they've already made a claim in the States. That's our law now. And so the question becomes, how do you interpret the law? Right? How will we interpret the law? Will we go back to loving the Lord our God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength, and loving our neighbor as ourselves? Will we get civilly engaged to challenge laws that are now putting people's lives at risk? And that's why, you know, I said it's not about civil disobedience. This is the law, but it's about civil engagement. We need to challenge the law. One more example, and then I'm going to wrap up until Christian education time. On November 1st, our provincial government is going to cut what's called the transition child benefit. It's $230 a month that's given for each child that somebody on Ontario Works can get if they are not eligible for Ontario child benefit or Canadian child benefit. Province is going to cut that to save some money. They're going to save about 0.07% of all revenues. It's not a lot of money in the bigger story. And out of a 60-odd page report on Ontario Works, and I've read it, I just can't remember how many pages it is, they took that one thing about transition child benefit, and that was the law that they decided that they would go after. And they would say, we're going to cut that because it largely targets asylum seekers, people without immigrant status here. And so back in August, I got permission to present to the Community Service Committee at the Region of Waterloo what this would mean for about 600 children in the Waterloo region, but also 16,000 children across the province. And I said, I would like the Waterloo region to go back to the province and say, no, you can't do this. You can read that on our website, the presentation that I did to the committee. At the committee, they made a motion to research it further. which is a win. When you get staff to use staff time to research the matter further. And at the municipal leaders meeting in Ottawa, our chair, Karen Redman, brought up the issue at that meeting with the province. And then now, more recently, it's now in the news. That's called civil engagement. We got the ball rolling. We raised the issue. We did a really good presentation, laid out the facts, talked about the difference between fiscal responsibility and social responsibility, and that the two don't have to compete with each other. And we asked for a very clear response, and God has given us favor, and we have gotten that response, and we now have municipal leaders across the province going after our present government to say, you can't do this. This will be devastating for 16,000 children and their parents, caregivers, whoever. That's called civil engagement. That's called going above the law and saying, that's not good enough. We're to love those who come into our midst, regardless of their status. We're to take care of them. We're to get our hands dirty. We're to get up close, take care of them, make sure they're going to be okay. So at MCRS, when we work with asylum seekers, we're not just working with the people who come through our door. We're actually working with the larger community and leaders to help them think differently about what it means to care for people coming into our midst. And the Good Samaritan principle is one that everybody understands. We have it in our legal language, we have it in our medical language, we have it in our civil language, and we have it in our faith language. And I love that because those are all realms where God is at work, and we get to be a part of that. And your support of MCRS makes that possible. Thank you.